Enders and Tom, welcome to this podcast, this Bioforum podcast about cybersecurity. So we're going to talk a little bit about different aspects of cybersecurity as we think they're interesting, both to ourselves and to the wider audience. And you'll discover in a moment we have a biomanufacturer and a supply partner on the call today, and hopefully that gives us some perspective as well on the topics that we're going to chat about. So my name's Tim Horton. I'm a facilitator at Bioforum looking after this cybersecurity work. And I'm going to ask Anderson and Tom to introduce themselves. Tell us what company you're working for and tell us your role. So Anderson, if you would go first, please.
Sure, Tim. So thank you. Thanks for having me. So my name is Anderson. I work 25 years for Merck. Merck is a scientific and technology company. We have three business sectors, so electronics, life science, and healthcare. And I am responsible for cybersecurity to protect the healthcare sector.
Thank you. And Tom?
Thank you, Tim. Tom House, I've been with Rockwell for about 23 years now. I support our enterprise life sciences industry, working with Merck and Anderson and many of the other accounts, and I support primarily our cyber and digital offerings.
Thank you. So Anderson, just tell me a little bit about DPMM. How is Merck using the product or the solution in your company?
Sure, Tim. So in Merck, we have been using the DPMM since quite a long time. So the business decided to use the framework to support them creating a vision. I think this was very important that we could, after the assessments from our sites, we could speak the same language, right? That every site was understanding what digitalization mean in a different way. So the DPMM helped us to be on the same page and also to discuss the same aspects. And even more important was the tab that we created together with the Bioforum group. The consequential next question was always, what does that mean for cyber, right? So when we were having now a clear view, a clear vision where the business want to go for that given site, what digitalization, what connectivity would mean for the plant force systems, then the next question was coming to my organization, how do we protect? And that relation was not so easy to be done before we updated, we improved the tab with Tom and the other guys in the forum. So the questions now in the cyber tab was supporting them to understand the higher I get with the connectivity on some aspects, so the more protection I need to bring to that level. And I think, Tom, what we have done together was trying to break down this not for the whole plant, because you cannot connect and digitalize the whole plant. We were trying to get that more on a kind of need to connect bases, right? So if a system is more elevated, so that system gets more protection. If a site or the whole organization is more mature, so then they would be able to apply better controls, so cyber controls, and that's how we have been doing. So the DPMM has helped us before, with setting a vision, speaking the same language, and now with the new tab improved for the cyber controls that we have to design and plan to be implemented, so that this was really well done. We had.
So Tom, I'll bring you in. When we were looking at those improvements, what was it that we thought was necessary? What kind of material did we start adding to that that operations and cyber tab, and what was the influencing rules or ideas behind that were out there that we kind of wanted to bring into this digital plant maturity model version 3?
Okay, I'll reinforce what Anderson said in that you can't really achieve digital maturity without introducing risk. As you connect, you have to protect at the same time. So I like how you said that, Anderson. But at Rockwell Automation, we have internal manufacturing as well. So we don't follow the DPMM in particular for our, because we're more on the electronic side, like the other business, Anderson, that Merck has. But what we do is test many of the technologies and solutions that we bring to market within our own manufacturing facilities, whether that's on the digital side with our own MES and things like that, or it's on the cyber side with deploying IDS tools and deploying whitelisting tools and things like that on the countermeasures. But I think it was important to be involved with the DPMM to make sure that we have alignment with global standards. So that was one thing that Anderson and I added to that cyber tab, was to give very specific examples of a level of digital maturity or level of cyber maturity in the digital plan maturity model and how that aligns to IEC 62443 levels of security that can be achieved. Because I think many companies are not just looking at DPMM to guide the vision, but also as it relates to insurability and as it relates to working with their supply partners, having certification against standards that are globally recognized that can show and prove that investments have been made in the right ways to achieve those maturity levels from a cyber perspective.
Yeah, Tom, and I do remember, Tom, this was very important because bringing these standards, the industry standards, right, was a way to speak the language of the OT people as well. That's the way they work, right? So they say, well, the more you connect, the more you protect. They say, how? If you just say, well, here are some controls you can apply, but you don't connect to an industry standard like IEC 62443, it would be a very hard sell, right? So remember, Tom, when we were working together, of course, people from the BioForum community were saying, oh, let's put this standard in that list. And then we realized it's not only about cyber, because that's how it was before. Remember the version before the version 3 was IT protection or IT-focused protection. Mm-hmm. I think our big, I would say, highlight was now we're talking about protecting those ICS, the OT systems in a more connected plant. What is the best standard we can, you know, use to refer to that speaks the language from the shop floor, the guys who are actually having to be implementing these controls? And that was a very good way out. I think that was a team back to you. I think this was a very nice, way that we put together those, the needs and the standards and how the people would take it.
And just one final question, perhaps about the topic, and we'll move on to another one. How have you found using that tool? Have you been able to drive consistency? Because that's always one of the challenges, you know, multiple people looking at these things. So how have we found getting cyber consistency of assessment? Anderson, I'll start with you, and then Tom.
Yeah, sure. Very interesting question, Tim, because one thing is when we work in a community like we did, we put all these brilliant minds together. We think we have that very right, and then it's a very useful tool. Yes, when you take it in a company like Mac, right? So we have production, we have laboratories, we have mixed sites, we have R&D labs. All of that we classify as OT, right? When you give that a framework to different people, of course, different interpretation will come. And what I realized is that I have a team of cybersecurity managers, and that they had to really work hand in hand with the plant operators, with the plant OT teams. We have service delivery managers on the plant level. Everyone was interpreting the same question in a different way, right? And that level of consistency, I mean, the framework is great, but to achieve a level of consistency, you need to put some work on still, like I said, every site is different. The interpretation of the questions are different. The understanding of IEC 62443 control is different. And the things that they, especially I think the challenge was the things that they have already today, how do they interpret that as a control that I can check, because it's not a one-to-one relation, right? But all of them appreciated the new tab, the new version, because it said now it's talking cybersecurity, but it's also talking our OT language, right? So this was quite interesting.
Thank you. And Tom, any final thoughts? I know you said Rockwell are using a DPMM in a slightly different way, just partly your focus, but any extras that you want to add about that whole thing of being consistent across organizations with these kind of assessments?
Yeah, I think one of the most valuable things about the way that the DPMM was developed is it wasn't just Anderson and you and I, Tim. There were many other stakeholders from other companies in biotechnology that all contributed. And it was interesting as we had the conversations to say, does this level of capability fit in level 4 or level 3? And one of the things that we did with some of the more people and operational things in that tab in particular, because it is cyber and operations, is move some things down the stack to say, when we looked at this in 2018, this was a level 4 capability. Mm-hmm. But because of technological advancement in the interim period of time, this is now a level 3 capability, and it should be more accessible to the market. And that's one of the things that we found a lot of value in being a partner to BioForum, is that the life science industry is one of the key industries that Rockwell Automation serves. And we use the digital plant maturity model to help inform the strategy within our business units to say, what are the capabilities that we need to innovate into our solutions? What are the innovations that we need to go acquire in the market, because it's a gap in our ability to deliver value to this level of maturity from a digital or a cyber perspective. And it gives us an opportunity to get direct feedback from Anderson, from other biomanufacturers, as we continue to innovate and continue to move our solution space forward.
Thank you. So Anderson, Tom, it'd be good to talk about this idea of IT-OT convergence. We hear a lot about it. It feels really important. Lots of companies are looking at it and indeed have made steps to change their organizations and address that in some way. Tom, can you tell us a little bit about why this is a topic? What's the thing? What are some of the ideas that are going on that make this an important topic to be talking about?
Yeah, well, convergence as a general term is not new. If you go back in time, it was 1992 when the Purdue model came out of Purdue University and was first released. The Open Device Vendors Association, ODVA, was founded in 95. That's the organization behind Ethernet IP, the common industrial protocol that you see across industrial IoT devices. So that was more than 30 years ago that Ethernet, a traditional IT technology, started to become available and is now standard within OT. I think that was the technology enabler for convergence. And again, it's decades old. There are many other technologies that have driven tighter convergence since that time, from a software perspective or from a hardware perspective. And I think it's important to note that BioForum has released a few different white papers recently specific to cybersecurity, looking at like vulnerability management, because as you converge networks and you establish connectivity, like we talked about with the digital plant maturity model, you're introducing risk, or you're exposing risk that you may not have planned to expose and that you need to protect. And that vulnerability management is a big piece of it. And so I think while most conversation around convergence is focused on technology, I think it's also critically important to understand convergence from a people and a culture perspective. Because the Purdue model in its original inception was an organizational model, and it defined silos of responsibility of business management versus operations, and the discrete operations versus the hybrid operations versus the continuous operations. Those were roles of responsibility for people. And you can't operate in those types of silos today. You can't say these are the people that care about this type of process or that type of process, or these are the IT people and these are the OT people. While individuals have those skill sets, convergence from a people and culture perspective requires that you take one view of organizational risk. And it's not just technological risk, it's also people risk, it's also product risk, like that becomes the organizational context for convergence of not just technology, but convergence of the people that operate in the culture that they operate within.
Mm. Tom, that's very thanking. That's a kind of really helpful, just sort of setting out the stall of how that looks. And Anderson, in Merck, you'll have been grappling with all of those ideas, I guess. So what practical things have you been doing in your organization, and how have you gone about thinking those things through and making the world of Merck operations a little better, given the need for this convergence?
Sure. And Tim, I think Tom mentioned a great point. So this is not new, right? So the convergence, so as he mentioned, the Purdue model, ISO 95, 99, look how long ago, right? For Merck, we were trying to answer why now, why only now, right? Mm-hmm. And I think what we learned is the push for digitalization, right? So you could not operate a IT isolated environment, isolated from the OT environment, and digitalize it without this convergence. I think Tom mentioned that convergence is not about the technology. I think the technology part is kind of easy, right? If you compare to the teams operating the technology on the OT and the IT side, which needs to converge to enable the digitalization, right? So I think that was what we learned. So, well, if you want to go digital, so again, the digital plant maturity model, saying we want, our ambition is to go to connected plant. Okay, what does it take? It's much more than technology, and the convergence we are trying to do, we started with the technology, as of course, right? So the IT and the OT organizations are very technical oriented, and first we thought, okay, let's do the technology convergence, then we are done. We were very wrong, right? So then we understood there is much more on the people and the process. So it's really this people, process, and the technology converging. And to the cyber security, it's even more important, right? Because the environment that the IT traditional cybersecurity professionals will use to protect and have the processes and have the technology is not the environment they find in OT, right? And that convergence is more than just convergence, it's upskilling, reskilling, right? So shifting people, the way they operate, enabling them to operate in a different environment, which is, yes, technology helps because it gets you in, but what about your processes? What about your own organizations? You're not ready for that, right? So the convergence to us means those really three dimensions, people, process, and technology. We are still in the process to do that. Nowadays, as I am responsible for cybersecurity, now I see the next convergence coming. And that is under the traditional SOC, right? So security operations centers, instant response teams, right? That's where before we were talking about IT and OT, now it's to me cybersecurity and OT convergence, right? I'm pushing that because my cyber teams now, if I call them like that, they're not ready for protecting the OT. So they're not fully ready, right? So we need to converge that as well. So now we came from, you see, a very old concept, right? So from Purdue model, now the teams talk the technology, they understand technology. We start converging IT and OT, so we are much better there now. Now it's time to converge the cybersecurity organization.
Yeah, thank you. So Tom, picking up on that kind of comment, maybe about, you know, SOCs that have operated, you know, for cybersecurity that have worked across the Merck. I mean, have you been making changes in Rockwell to kind of help the delivery of a robust cybersecurity service across both an IT and an OT space to improve all of that?
Yeah, I think it's interesting that when you look at what's the environment, it's very heterogeneous. So any supplier who's going to do cyber work has to be able to really be vendor neutral. So I think that's a lot of what we've built, is that the skill sets that we use that are required within consultants are both IT skill sets as well as OT skill sets, because you're going to have to understand technologies like private cloud platforms or things like software-defined networking that's traditionally on the IT side of the house, but how is that relevant and how can that be securely applied to the use cases that encompass the industrial IoT devices? So that skill set of both IT knowledge and understanding and OT knowledge and understanding is converged as well. And I think it's, I would say from a technology perspective, it's important to understand that IT technologies are not always applied in the same way within OT. There are many companies that have OT specific technology, but there are common technologies between IT and OT, like the way that firewalls are used for zones and conduits, the way that Active Directory is deployed in those environments. It's important to converge the IT and OT teams so that you understand, yes, it is the exact same technology. We still have Windows-based OS devices and Linux-based OS devices in IT, and we have those same types of operating systems in OT. What resides in those systems and the criticality of those applications to the supply of the products that we build is very, very different. And you may need to have good IT skills to manage the configuration of a Windows OS or manage the configuration of user and asset management as a strategy, but do it in a way that is in compliance with the GMP environment, with good manufacturing processes, the change control, all of the validation that takes place. So that's an understanding that needs to be aligned between all organizations that touch anything to do with the OT cyber applications.
So thanks, Tom. Anderson, just thinking broadly about the kind of risk issues around putting these environments together, what have you done practically in Merck to address some of that and to make this work for you at the moment?
Great question, Tim. So it touches exactly what we were saying before. We had the convergence of IT and OT, right? And now we are also converging the cyber organizations. And why? We realized was too much of an ask to put the risk management, the cyber risk management, into the IT organization. Like we were saying, of course, they have to learn how to connect the OT, how to work, you know, with this new type of equipment that needs connectivity and data flows and so on. But the risk management is not supposed to be done by them, right? So IT does not fully own the assets, the ownership in the OT. So that was also very important for us. Then we defined in MAC what we call the three lines of defense. So the first line of defense is the one who owns the asset, and they are responsible to protect that asset, right? Well, how they do that, that's when we come in, the second line of defense, right? So we are providing the cybersecurity frameworks, the governance, and then we support the first line of defense, so the asset owners, to mitigate the risk, to handle, to get visibility, handle the risk, manage the risk. And now we realize that works for both ways, right? So we have the asset owner in OT, understanding, visualizing the risk, bringing to us, we work with them. And we are also supporting the IT because they also have the traditional IT risks, right? So we offload that risk management from the IT and the OT. That's what we do in the cybersecurity team. So we found that to be more efficient. It's an operating model we have been implementing for the past 2 years. It has been proven successful. Of course, every model has pros and cons, right? So we are having some pros that we can see that it's yielded already bringing results. We have cons and we have to adjust that. So for risk ownership, I think with Tom, we discussed that, who really owns the risk. If there is, like Tom always mentioned, the material, you know, a loss in OT, who really owns that risk? Isn't it now the OT alone, but they are using our connected technology, and that technology is provided by IT and then the business. So now we are learning from this new model, but it's much better now, the risk oversight. So the risk oversight is more concrete.
Brilliant. Thank you, Anderson. And Tom, any final builds from you?
No, I think if we lean in on the idea of risk, I think you referred to material impact. And that's what, if you look at the SEC requirements for publicly traded companies that are listed on the Securities and Exchange Commission within the United States, that is a material impact, and it's all about reporting of disclosure. So that, how do you determine material impact? I think that's the biggest question. And everything that is material generally is impacted because of OT. I mean, a material impact is one that has a material impact to the bottom line of the company. And generally, you've seen cyber incidents that affect the ability of manufacturing to proceed. That's could also be in the area of IT, but how do you determine really that unification of the risk of a digital technology that may be more IT centric, but is completely supported by OT? Like, let's say you have a historian system, and that historian system is fed from all of your GMP data within the manufacturing supply, and that data is backed up on a regular basis into an IT database. You've got a 3-2-1 backup strategy for that data. And there are regulatory requirements within the FDA of how long you need to retain that data and data integrity rules. And we've talked about that a lot in the past. But let's just assume that there's an an impact that that source of the data is lost. And then you're reliant on IT to say, yes, we have good backups, and yes, the backup data is valid, and yes, we didn't lose any data in that interim period. And when do you determine material of that impact where you no longer have that data, or you the window of loss is too big to allow the product to be sold? So it's interesting, and I think what's most important is that material impact is an executive level reporting requirement. So one of the things that we did at Rockwell Automation is have our executive leadership team go through an exercise in preparation for the enforcement of the SEC rules to determine how would we as a company report a material impact to Wall Street effectively? Who has to sign off on it? Do we have all of the appropriate data feeds so that we can understand the impact and appropriately report how deep do we go in what we report so that we're satisfying the regulatory requirements, but also satisfying what our share owners like need to know? And that was a very interesting exercise, and one that I know many of the industry biomanufacturers have done as well. And it's good that that level of visibility now exists. If you look at NIS2 in the European Union, similar requirements. And it's just bringing this idea of risk to the forefront, where, to your point, Anderson, it's not an IT problem anymore. And it's not something that the asset owner in OT can fully own and manage. It requires that convergence again from a people perspective and from a unification of risk mitigation perspective at the company.
So let's move the conversation on. I want to talk a little bit about regulatory and validation challenges. The world is moving fast, and there are quite a number of initiatives from governments and pan-government organizations thinking a bit about issues of critical infrastructure and cybersecurity more broadly. Tom, I wonder if you can talk to us a little bit about some of the changes that are going on in the legislative landscape. You know, what's going on? Why is it happening at this particular point?
I think we know that there have always been regulatory oversight and requirements for operating companies, whether it's from the Food and Drug Administration, or what's more recent is the European Union or the United States and the Securities and Exchange Commission enforcing requirements for disclosure primarily. And in order to disclose properly, you have to have a level of information and an understanding of your cybersecurity posture. Because there's an expectation, I think, from share owners today that when companies release a 10K annual report or an 8K quarterly update, that they have an understanding of risk. And risk can no longer just be those things outside cybersecurity, because cybersecurity is such a big influencer into the integrity of operations today. The fact that everyone recognizes is that the adversaries within the world today understand the criticality of OT and understand the value of their campaigns into OT. And therefore, the operating companies themselves cannot operate without understanding risk as it relates to OT and to that supply chain. You can look at the SEC requirements for responsible disclosure. You can look at the NIS2 directive within the EU. There's historically been a lot of focus on critical infrastructure, the infrastructure that supports the operations of a country, whether it be water and electricity and communications. And there are many different government supported initiatives that have turned into regulations in the past that all speak to having first an understanding of your cyber posture, having a minimal level of controls in place, whether those controls be technological or process, and have an ability to disclose or report on that posture or incidents that occur against it to share owners or to leadership. So I think that's what's most exciting, is that you can't ignore it anymore. So I think gone are the days where you can publish a 10K or an 8K and not say cyber at all. 15 years ago, that was perfectly normal. And there's a lot of risk to saying we are cyber secure, we are making investments, and not having that be true because of the internal governance that you have over a program and the internal investments that you've made. So there has to be that level of alignment from an audit perspective, right, as well as to just build that trust and be able to properly respond when things happen.
Thanks, Tom. And Anderson, in Merck Group, you can see all these things coming at you. You presumably have got some projects in place to do what is necessary to be ready for those. I mean, what's the approach being in within Merck, and do you have any particular concerns or learning points that you can share with the audience?
Sure, Tim. So it was like Tom mentioned, right? So we cannot ignore it, because in European we have the NIS 2 or NIS 2, and he mentioned regulations in the US. It's not because you need to comply with the regulations. So our learnings are, Tom mentioned again, the response, right? And we need to report if something happens, right? So like we mentioned here in the chat before, yes, now we are putting the technology in place, right? So we are connecting the plant, we are making it more secure, we have the proper controls. Great, so then we can detect, great. But now we need to respond as well, and we need to report. And I think that's why we have been talking about the convergence on this people, process, and technology. You can have the best technology in the world, the best process there, but if your people are not engaged, right? So in all levels, now I'm talking about people on the shop floor, down to the OT operations, but also the cyber teams, the IT teams, creating that response in a way like Tom was mentioning, we need to report that to authorities. Well, how do we make that now, this chain of response, being something tangible, that we are assessing the risks, we are reporting on business risks. That's not a cyber risk anymore, right? What is a cyber risk? It's just another business risk, right? And also our big lessons learned was, let's engage with the business and bring them into this understanding that here's a cyber risk, just another risk, that like you treat your normal business operational risks, right? And with that awareness, then we are able to engage the proper level of attention with the stakeholders or with the executives. But also now we get sponsors, because they want to eliminate the cyber risk, which brings a big business risk. So making that chain of command, even if I may say, working from the end to end now, and not isolating cyber as an IT topic. So that's also very important learning for us. Because it's cyber, there is an automatic relation to IT, and that's not the case. So Tim, what we are also doing concretely is a program. So we are using NIS2 in our case in Europe as a very good opportunity. No, it's unavoidable, so we have to comply, but we are using that program internally to bring that awareness across the organizations, right? It's not about, this is not an IT or a cyber issue or an OT issue. It's a business risk that we have to manage, and the regulations are going to push us to apply the controls, and that this is helping us, right, to be compliant, but it's helping us to protect the company. So we are really using it in an opportunistic way.
Thank you. Thank you both. Really interesting topic, and of course, much will come down the pipe as well.
Well, I'll add, Tim, that a paper that was published by the Cyber Community of Practice was around tabletop exercises.
Yeah,
and I think that's very relevant to this topic, whether it's the executive leadership team doing a tabletop on how we disclose and what material impact means, or how do you get alignment between the convergence of IT and OT. You could set up a tabletop exercise that brings in both of those parties and ties in business risk from a quality perspective with business risk from a cyber perspective. So that's a great opportunity to enforce collaboration and illuminate if there's issues from a convergence perspective on the people side without any risk to operations. These are activities that happen around a conference table with some laptops and some simulated things. It can all be done on paper even with no digital technology whatsoever. I think that's an opportunity that I'd recommend everybody go do, whether it's at the executive leadership team level for responsible disclosure and material impact, or it's a way to align the response from an IT and OT perspective to things that would have a business impact that encompass both of those operating teams.
No, brilliant. Thank you, Tom. Yeah, so that document that Tom refers to is available on our BioForum website, and it's an example of a tabletop. And as Tom suggests, it's adaptable. You can take some of the ideas there and use them for whatever the content is that you particularly want to focus on. So, Anderson, Tom, thanks so much for the conversation today. It's been really interesting to talk through a number of cybersecurity topics. We've also got stuff on our BioForum website, so you can go and look at some of our outputs that we've produced over the last couple of years. So please do that. And Anderson, how have you found today having the conversation? Been useful to share and discuss these topics?
Sure, Tim, and thanks for having me. It was a great experience. I'm happy to do that again, and of course, getting questions from the community, maybe focusing on other topics. Very happy to do that. Thanks a lot.
Good stuff. And you, Tom, how have you found it?
Yeah, it's been a great experience working through with Anderson on the digital climate maturity model, the new tab that we put in. And I'll just say thank you as well to all of the members of the community practice across the industry who've contributed in support of the conversations and thoughts that went into everything that we do here. So thank you, Tim.
Thank you both again. And thank you to the audience for listening.